This episode of Leave the Adventure Zone Zone brought to you by Dove Soap. Dove, love the skin you're in.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Adventure Zone Zone.
How come I can't do that voice?
Can you just let me fucking do the intro?
Sure, fine.
Guests of the Adventure Zone Zone stay at their respective houses.
The Adventure Zone Zone is also sponsored by Viking Cruises. I'm Laura Dern, and have been the whole time.
Winners of the Adventure Zone Zone are going to space camp!
Really?
The Adventure Zone Zone is filmed at Buena Vista Studios, Buena Vista, California.
Hey, what are we doing here?
This is the Adventure
right now,
Zone
funny
Zone.
Jokes.
Yeah, okay. You're not letting me fucking host. I'm hosting it. This is the... It's such a good name. The Adventure Zone Zone, a podcast about a podcast called The Adventure Zone that we all made together, and we still do, but different. My name is Justin McElroy. I played the character of Taco on The Adventure Zone. Balance.
I'm Travis McElroy. I play Magnus. Justin, do you think there are people who are listening to this episode who don't already know that?
It's a weird place to start, y'all. Yeah.
I'm Griffin McElroy. I did all the other characters.
I'm Clint McElroy, and I played Merle Hightower.
Nope.
I love it.
High Church. High Church.
Fucking shitting me.
That was an incredible, probably the best loved character of the entire
best loved, least remembered story. In terms of last names.
Well, the fans remember me.
If on the odd chance you are starting this, like. This is going to be completely a spoiling thing for the previous arc of our show, Balance, which now, at the end of it, I wish we'd called Bonds, but I think Balance is fine.
Okay. Well, it's too late. I wish you had said something earlier.
I wish I had. It occurred to me as I was listening to the finale for the umpteenth time. But
can everybody sign? I just heard two different phone notifications.
It's Dad. He's always got his shit cranked. And I'm trying to teach
blowing
him
up. Off.
Listen, you don't.
Everybody's hitting him up now like, hey, I heard you on Adventure Zone Balance. Will you come on my thing and forget how to play a game on my show? Everybody wants Dad to come on and forget how to do stuff on their
so
show now.
Hot right now.
Griffin,
yes.
I want to start out with like a general question, and we've got a bunch of questions from listeners, but I want to ask some of our own questions.
Yeah, I think that would be good if we started out by just if you all have questions for me now that the campaign's done and you all know everything.
I am curious if you can, and I mean, I know that this stuff is always sort of like, so, what's wrong, Dad?
I don't know why this is still making sounds.
The iPad?
Yeah.
Okay. Give me your iPad.
You're going to turn it off.
I'm going to sit on it until it breaks like I'm a gorilla. No, you. Okay, that's muted. It shouldn't be
yeah,
doing
I know.
This.
You heard right. it.
Oh, this God, is this show. Is top notch.
So, Griffin, can you describe to me in an abbreviated form, I guess, how the, like, in what order the sort of main keystones of the story sort
yeah.
of came to you? Like, what the inception of it was and how it sort of built over time in your head.
So like it started with the Lost Mines of Phandelver book that comes with the starter kit, fifth edition starter kit, which is really great. I really enjoyed when I was in town for when we were making the TV show, Justin ran a quick game for us, for me and the Smurls, and we all played basically the same adventure. And so Justin got an idea of like the other ways that it could have gone, because there's a lot of other stuff in that book that I kind of condensed and fast-forwarded through. So, because by like episode two, really, like I knew I wanted to move on to original stuff. And by the time we reached the end of Here There Be Gerblins, I had an outline for like what the structure of the story was. I've talked about how like it had a very video gamey structure of you all getting the seven, you know, goals. It's got to be seven always every time. They could have been fucking power pendants, they could have been magic crystals or whatever, but this time they were the grand relics.
Can I ask, because this is something I always want to ask people who like run shows like this, at that point how far ahead did you know, like did you have a concept for the finale? Did you know like what characters would end up being a much bigger part of it?
No, there's and I don't want to give away too much because we're going to be like diving. There's a lot of very, very granular, very specific questions about stuff like this. But the answer is like I had like the very, very, very loose structure of the campaign in mind. I had like all of the Bureau of Balance stuff figured out. But the arcs, like I figured out what the next arc was going to be while we were doing the previous arc. And really, I think by the time we got to Crystal Kingdom, I kind of realized, like, okay, the rubber really needs to meet the road here, and I need to start setting up sort of the bigger picture stuff. And that's why we got a lot of stuff in. It's funny, if you go back and listen to Gurblins and you go back and listen to Rockport Limited, those were both, I think, good little self-contained things that ultimately, like, have very little bearing on the rest of the campaign at large. When we meet the Red Robe at the end of Pedals to the Metal, like that was the first sort of hint that I was giving, like, okay, there is a bigger thing going on here. And then in Crystal Kingdom, it was like, that was me setting up the, you know, the planar system stuff and the multiverse stuff and more Red Robe stuff. And yeah, that's where you all got the patches, which sets up the IPRE. Like, so I think by Crystal Kingdom, I pretty much knew what was going on. I knew that you all were the Red Robes. I knew that I knew a lot of that stuff. But it really took.
Sorry, go ahead.
But it really took like a lot of playing to like get to that point to like know what the story was going to be.
Do you remember? For me, so much of the story sort of hinges on the Void Fish. Do you remember when the idea of the Void Fish came to you and like what problem that was trying to solve?
I mean, partially, I think when it started, it was solving for the structure of it, right? Of you all trying to get these very, very powerful relics. And the question would have been, like, if these relics exist, why isn't everybody trying to get at them all the time? Why wouldn't your characters know about them already? If these, like, seven immensely powerful objects existed in the world and you all were adventurers and these things were capable of like mass destruction, how would you not know about their usage up to this point? And so it was kind of started as a way to like introduce this thing in a way where your characters wouldn't have known about it. But obviously like what the Void Fish was, after I'd introduced it like that, I realized it could mean like a whole lot more, and we could, you know, introduce a lot of different narrative stuff involving like you all having other memories that were suppressed. And yeah, so the Void Fish became a much bigger thing. I think when we meet Lucas, and I think like Lucas and Johan have a scene with the Void Fish, that is kind of where I started to like figure out like, okay, no, the Void Fish is a much bigger thing here.
And is that where you decided you would kill Johan and make everyone sad, or did that just come later because you were just feeling really bloodthirsty? Or
I mean, I can talk about that. Like, Johan's whole deal, that was one of, in my mind, like, one of the bigger themes of the show is, like, how people respond to the fact that, like, you aren't always going to be here, and that the works that you create and the things that you do outlive you. And so
legacy.
Johan, yeah, a legacy. Like, so Johan was, like, a big thing there, right? Like, a lot of the conversations you had was like him talking about like, oh well, I want to be a great musician, but I'll never be remembered because of this. And when I first heard Void Fish Plural, the track from Rachel Rose Mitchell that we used in the penultimate episode, when I actually like heard that song, that firmed up in my mind what those moments were going to be, what that payoff was going to be. And I really liked the idea of just like Johan's work not only like outliving him, but being fucking like broadcast to every person across all of the planes. I thought that was like a really cool moment. And so like, that's kind of when that firmed up.
Was Johan, okay, was the voice at the beginning of every episode supposed to be Johan?
No. Okay, so this is also a question that we got. The voice at the beginning, and I don't know if I did a great job setting this up, and maybe I should just leave it a little bit more obscure, but the voice in my mind was the story of the story and song that was being sent out, that was being like broadcast by, I guess, Junior. I guess the voice was Junior, right? Because Fisher put out the song and Junior put out the story. And so I thought it would be cool if the podcast was kind of the story in a way, and you were hearing everything that Junior like knew about this world and the events that happened in it. And so like that's why in the finale there is
you don't hear from it. Yeah.
You don't hear the deep voice in the finale because they say at the in the penultimate episode, like, that's all I know. You're all caught up. That's everything that I know. Let's find out what happens together. And then the finale is like all of us seeing what happens together. It's no longer the story being told by Junior. It's just like the thing. I dig that shit in basically all forms of media, this idea of just like meta narrative and like this the things that you are experiencing in whatever it is, the game, the movie, the book, whatever, is part of a character inside of the work transmitting it in a way. The Zero Escape games do that in a way that I think is like really cool, and so like I kind of wanted to take a stab at that.
We got more questions for Griffin, obviously, that, and I'm sure we'll have some organically that come up, but since we could bloviate about our own bullshit for hours on end, I'm going to try to keep this on the rails a little bit with another question from a listener that's directed to everybody. You all mentioned, and not Griffin, so get bent. You all mentioned you cried during the finale. Which specific moment made you emotional enough to cry? And I will direct this at Father first.
This sounds, I don't want to sound self-serving. Okay.
Dad, we're literally doing a show talking about our own show.
Yeah, we are serving ourselves.
I guess we're supposed to be.
I don't think you
got to
worry about that. Like, okay. If you start talking about your favorite episode of Battlestar Galactica, I think that'd be way weirder.
Oh, man. The one where... Starbuck. Okay. All right, if it's about the finale, the one time I can remember crying was Merle's last scene with... stop looking at me, Juice. Merle's last scene with Mavis when she talked about how proud she was of how well he was doing. And he said, I love you, baby, because that was kind of me telling you guys the same thing.
Gross.
It is gross.
What a nerd.
But because I was so proud to be part of it. And, you know, and so, yeah, so... And I cried every time Tom Baudet died. How's that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're out. Travis, go.
Then you cried zero times because I don't think you ever did.
Travis, bare your soul.
So for me, I think this will not come as a surprise to anyone who listened to it, but basically like every...
The last 20 minutes.
Yeah, everything that happened in the wrap-up. I based a lot of Magnus's backstory and motivation and stuff on... Oh, not to get too super real for a moment, we lost our mom when I was 21. So I based a lot of like his motivation to do good on that. And so the moment where Magnus says to Julia that he just tried to make her proud of him is from a very personal place for me and how I live my life day to day. So like that. And I think also just getting, just having a resolution to the story of Magnus was very, very fulfilling for me because I really liked over the course of so many episodes and so many years having the chance to kind of unfold it as we went, and the fact that you really didn't get a lot of his backstory until like I think the fourth arc, I think until 11th hour maybe.
Yeah, in the flashback temptation episode.
Yeah, and so like getting to like slowly kind of build to that moment and getting to have an actual cap on it was both emotional for the character but also very satisfying for me as the creator of Magnus, and just it was a relief to have that moment. So that
let me add one quick thing before we do that. Your mom's fingerprints are all over this story.
Absolutely, yeah.
And I want to tell everybody the whole choose joy attitude, that was Leslie McElroy. I mean, that was her defining personality trait. And, you know, that rings out through, I think, the whole series. And so...
Certainly in, like, most of Merle's, like, serious interactions with people, yeah, of which there were like a lot in the back half of the podcast. Juice, did you get weepy in the... I edited it obviously, but I didn't hear any, you know, deep Travis sobs.
No sobbing. I'm 36. Okay. So, okay.
You fucking tweeted a whole thing about how crying is good, and now you're putting everybody on blast.
No, I'm not trying to put everybody on blast. You know what got to me? I didn't feel that way while we were recording because I felt like I couldn't let myself get that sort of emotionally, there's just too much going on in my brain, show-wise.
Right.
But, like, re-listening, especially the parts, I'll tell you the parts that hit me is the parts that we didn't hear, but we would re-listen. I had this is kind of weird, but when new Adventure Zone episodes come out, I will often, like, sneak into a rabbit stream or a Discord.
I did that in the finale, and I totally did not announce that I was there. And I know it's a creepy thing, but I really wanted to know what it was like to see people listen to it for the first
right.
time.
Right, and I did that. I listened to the end of the penultimate episode, and I cried, and I, like, cheered and, like, fist up in the air, like, yelling. Like, I was, like, so jazzed, and we hadn't heard that part during the show, the part about Johan, you're going to fight and you're going to have to fight and you're going to win. And, like, I just found that so inspirational and sort of like, I don't know, like a very good antidote for a lot of the messages of the world at that time, which is this time now.
Yeah.
And I found that, and that actually leads me to a question, Griffin, like,
I wanted to mention real quick. I had a moment, and I don't think it kind of came through, but I was getting really choked up, and it was really, really hard for me to keep talking. And for me, that moment was Travis had just said in Thieves' Cant to Carrie, "Are you ready?" And Carrie gestures back, "I'm ready." And then I go into, like, the description of the wedding, which was really, really, really important to me. And not only that, I knew. That was it. That was the last monologue. You guys were done talking. The game was, this was it. This was the last thing. And for me, it had nothing to do with, like, what was happening in the narrative as much as it had to do with, like, when I said I'm ready, I was literally saying, like, I'm ready to send this story that we've all worked on and is so, 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 so special to me. I'm ready to, like, send it off. And so that whole last monologue, I was fighting off tears the whole time.
Can I also to that point, I do also want to say, so during Magnus's send off is, you know, when I was, like, crying, but my favorite kind of emotional payoff for me, just in, like, the more organic collaborative storytelling, is the fact that Magnus got to have, like, a best friend.
Yeah, for,
like,
sure.
I loved everything with Taco and Merle, but that was, like, a relationship unto itself. But, like, the fact that we got to build really organically a relationship that was just, like, a very interesting friendship between Carrie and Magnus made me so happy. That's that kind of thing in media, when you get to see people become friends, is way more interesting to me than any, like, romantic storyline in a TV show or movie, is watching two people you would never expect be friends.
And that's tough. That's, like, difficult to pull off. Like, romance is tough to pull off. And obviously, like, this is all our first stabs at, like, making fiction in this way. And so, like, that was something I was nervous about, you know, delivering on some different romance threads. But, like, I really loved that stuff, but, like, I really loved, like, Taco and Angus's, you know, friendship and mentorship, and Taco and Joaquin's friendship, and Magnus and Carrie, and John and Merle. Holy shit, like, all of those, like, relationships that started from zero and then, you know, turned into something else, I thought was, like,
it's kind of interesting to me that a show that is made by a family is much more about found families than it is about family, literally. I mean, even if you think about it, even the family that is our literal blood had to be found in the story. You know, it wasn't inbuilt in the characters. But, like, I think that there's something so moving about people choosing to be family that I think is, like, really powerful and beautiful. Okay, listen, we're like, almost 20 minutes in, and we've gotten one listener question. So we need to speed things up. I need brevity in your answers. Griffin, how soon did you know you were going to bring back Barry Blue Jeans?
So obviously, I knew by Seven Birds, right? End of Crystal Kingdom. At that point, when I said who the Seven Birds were going to be, I knew who they all were, right? Lube Davenport, Lucretia, Barry, and the three of you. So it was probably during Crystal Kingdom. During Crystal Kingdom, again, like I mentioned, was the time where I was like, okay, I need to figure out what the bigger thing is, how it's going to wrap up, and I need to start setting down breadcrumbs to get us there. And so, probably around then, I said a lot of stuff like Barry's dead. I think I did actually at one point say Barry's never ever coming back, which was...
Yes, you did. You lied about
only,
that.
That was the only lie, right? And I'm sorry I did that. But the rest of the time, I tried to be coy about it. Like, yeah, Barry's dead. He is dead. He's a lich. But whatever. By the
Travis.
Way, and the boys can attest to this, that episode, I think it was like 58, where I brought Barry back, I was so scared. Like, mm-hmm. I wanted that payoff to be so good, and you guys could hear it in my voice. I remember, like, we had to stop a couple times during that bit while we were like getting to the end of like the Wonderland stuff, and I was like, okay, give me a minute, because I needed to like collect myself, because I really 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 wanted that to land.
And now that we know that he listens, you're welcome, Tom Arnold.
Holy
yes.
shit,
you're welcome.
That's, yeah, that's been a
for bringing back your career.
Yeah, not your career.
I don't know about that.
Also, thank you for the Stupids. It's a great movie.
It is.
Sniper Joe, I should mention Kate was the one who asked that question. I don't think I got that in.
Yeah, and also Aqua Forchette asked the one about crying.
Okay, Sniper Joe asked, Travis, did you consider calling on Julia during the fight with Final John?
Holy shit, did people in the live feed that I was watching.
Oh, they were
this.
So ready for it.
Well, so here's the thing. To that point, I have always envisioned, and people have asked about this, I do envision Julia being... competent,
yeah,
being a badass. People have talked about, like, did they fight side by side? And about, yeah, duh. But I think, in that moment, honest to God, it never crossed my mind, because that would be not the right moment for that to happen.
Yeah, as somebody who like thought about who you all might summon with the bonds, I thought that there was a chance that it would happen, and we could do the reunion there, right? And Julia would do like some cool stuff, because I am fucking all about women having power and agency in this world. Obviously, for me, I thought it could go either way. If you did it, we could. I do not think it would have been. It would not have been difficult to find a way for her to have like some powerful effect, right? Mm-hmm.
I would have removed a lot of the power from the ending. Though,
I think, yeah. It would. I think it, yeah. Would have. I think it would have been. I think it would have taken away something from the reunion at the end of the episode. So that was the trade off. Like, we could either do it then and have like a cool reunion thing there and like a cool moment of Julia doing some badass stuff, and then maybe the ending wouldn't hit quite as hard as I think it absolutely did, thanks to that incredible song by Reader. The song just called Julia, which, by the way, that was a tricky thing to include in the show and a tribute without giving the moment away. Or we could just like, you could just not do it, and we do have that sort of powerful.
Well, to the thing, the convention of the bond summons was tricky, because I was still trying to play strategically, yeah, while also thinking story wise. So like, I will say that as far as did I consider, it really didn't occur to me, because just from a storytelling perspective, that was not the right time for that reunion. Like, it would have felt forced.
And I bet at least subconsciously you had faith that Griffin was going to resolve.
Yeah,
I think
100%. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, here's a question from Eva. Somebody's got that highlighted. I can't. Okay, it was me. Dad, did Merle ever try to resolve things with Hecuba?
No, I don't think so. I really don't.
A estranged wife.
Okay.
Here's the thing. One of the things we tried to show in like the second half of the whole arc was that Merle was trying to be a better dad, but Merle was a horrible husband.
Yeah.
It was better to try to forge something new with his kids. And by the way, thanks to the one person who pointed out that Mavis was actually his stepdaughter.
Yeah, yeah.
And Mookie was his child.
Right.
And that he was still trying to be a dad to both of them. And that, I think we both, well, I don't know about Griffin, but that happened kind of spur of the moment. But I think we needed a father's perspective somewhere in there.
It was so weird how many things in the show are spur of the moment things. And there was a lot of things, and this is a weird, I've never experienced this in other creative works, but a lot of times I opened my mouth on this show and my thought was, I hope this is true. Because yeah. like that a lot of the stuff, especially early on, we were just saying whatever dumb shit came to our heads, and we never really stopped that impulse. We just had like more footing, and like I had to have a lot of faith in them, but also myself, that like the things that I'm saying are, I hope the things that I'm saying are true.
But they always were, and that's one of the things that I think was great about the story we told, is like, it always was true. If you said it, it was true. That's kind of how D&D works.
Right, but at the same time, true to the narrative of what we were making and true to the game. And also, you have to remember, like, I've been in Taco Skin for 3 years, so, like, there's stuff at the, I hope it's true to, like, the beginning of the story and what, and the things he has said. You know, it is impossible to have a canonical sort of, like, understanding of everything he has said at every point in the story. But there were times when we couldn't do... I'll highlight one example that I can think of. When we were supposed to... what looked like turn on the Bureau of Balance.
Yeah, and God, that was such a tricky episode.
It was really hard because...
And you and I... The background, Justin and I record in the same room.
Right.
And so, you know, we don't make a lot of eye contact or anything like that. But I think we were
just
both
in life. They never right. look at it's very
never business.
Well, we don't look at people. But that was a very weird moment because I felt like we were being led in one direction, but it just didn't feel right.
And we had to stop and tell Griffin, like, hey, I understand the story needs to go here, but you're going to have to give us something more because we don't feel it.
That moment was kind of like a lot of my fears as DM and like storyteller for this podcast kind of realized, in that I kind of understood, like I have not set this up maybe enough. I do not know that I have necessarily earned this thing, because ultimately I wasn't asking you to turn on the Bureau of Balance and Lucretia and like betray them. And if you thought in that moment that like Lucretia was going to be the final boss or whatever, I could understand your trepidation. And because we definitely didn't earn that. I was trying to set up kind of a different thing of just like, I want you all to investigate this thing a little bit deeper. But I think I made it feel like the other thing, just because I didn't necessarily set that up enough.
That's why it was so interesting, just from my point of view, of like taking Magnus, who was maybe the most lawful good of the three of them, and then investing, like, starting, I think, in 11th hour, like, nope, you're a red robe, and there's a whole bunch of shit you don't know about, and you have to break your own rules to figure it out. And
that was super hard. It's just to complicate things even further, because Magnus, I think, did have that. Magnus did have that context. Magnus did want to investigate, and Taco and Merle did not. And I think that led to some interesting friction. And ultimately, I love the way that it turned out, because what happened was, especially with Taco, Taco's reasoning didn't turn to, all right, let's fucking... His thing wasn't, okay, I don't trust the Bureau of Balance, let's find out what's going on. Taco turned to, I don't trust anyone. And that was such an interesting character thing to then work back from in the finale. And I think if you think about all that stuff all happening in the same day, I think it makes a lot of the moments in the finale like a lot more powerful. And Taco goes from like, fuck everything, to I'm going to save everything. Like, I think it was a good payoff.
And it also is moments like that are why the accusations that I sometimes see on Reddit, what's up Reddit, of like railroading from Griffin ring hollow, because we could not be railroaded into something we didn't want to do. I mean, like,
yeah,
we create collaboratively and with guidance from Griffin, like, but if it's something that like didn't make sense for our characters or the story, we just wouldn't fucking do it.
Yeah.
While we're talking about Reddit, a lot of people talk about Homestuck all the time. I don't know what that is. Yeah. And people have basically said, like, this is just like Homestuck. This is directly lifted from Homestuck. I have no fucking clue what Homestuck is.
I know a little bit. I've read, like, a little bit of the beginning of Homestuck, and I
do not at me.
Well, I thought I understood what it was, but then I read, like, a wiki roundup of what it is, and it's like, oh, no, it's completely different from what I was. But as far as I can tell, it is also, like, a piece of fiction that dealt a lot with, like, alternate reality stuff and multiverse stuff, and
it was the first piece of media to ever do
but I think it was a very popular piece of media that did that for a web audience that has a lot of crossover between ours and their audiences. It also apparently ends with a lesbian wedding between two characters. Like, that is also the ending of it. So, like, okay, yeah, I guess there are some parallels. But there were a lot of people. I really, this stuff does not bother me at all, because it's, every time we put out a new episode, it was like, oh, did you take that from when we did the Robot Kingdom Stolen Century episode? People were like, ooh, somebody's been playing Nier Automata. And it's like, I haven't played it yet. But
okay. And that's not to say, like, I know we probably sound defensive at this point, but it's really, because there are many things that it's like, oh, was that, like, okay, when I called my assistant on the show, on Sizzle Pataka, when I decided his name was Sezed, that's because I was reading
Mistborn
series at the time, and that was a character that I really liked on that show, and I was like, ah, yeah, here's a little something for you. So, yeah, I do that sometimes, not in this exact instance.
I'm not defensive about it at all, because I can't be defensive about it, because I did pull a lot of inspiration from a lot of different things when we were making the story, and I try to be really forthcoming when we talk about that stuff, right? Like, Crystal Kingdom was inspired by us getting into the Alien series, and so I wanted to make sort of a sci-fi monster hunt kind of thing. And Pedals to the Metal was all Fast and the Furious, because I had just gotten into that series when we were watching that. So, like, it really doesn't bother me. There are a ton of parallels, as far as I can tell, between Adventure Zone and Homestuck, but, like, I just have not. It was not as enormous an inspiration as I think people thought it was, just because it sounds really cool, and I know some cool folks who have worked on it, but I don't know that much about it.
I think it'll be connected to this. Can we do the question from Gull Shriek?
Yeah, we can bounce around this list. I don't see why we don't need to. Okay.
Was there anything that was discussed for story or character development that happened in advance?
Okay. Never, right?
Yeah, never. I mean, you're talking about, like, did we have a call when we were not recording? We're like, okay, well, what if...
No, we did not. And I've seen that a couple of different times, and I think that is also ties in with what you were talking about before, because we did not discuss what was coming. If it ever happened, it was in the vaguest of generalities, where Griffin would say, you're going to have to make some tough choices or something, you know, along those lines.
Well, there was stuff like the items that we crafted, right, during Stolen Century, where Griffin would send us the mechanic and say, like, think about what you'd like,
stuff, because I cannot stress this enough. Nobody knew the things that I had planned. Like, Rachel didn't know. Like, I didn't tell Rachel. I didn't tell you guys. I didn't tell anybody. Which I talked about in the last one was, like, a really isolating thing that I kind of struggled with, because I had no idea whether or not this stuff was going to pay off like I thought it would in my mind, but I really wanted those moments where it's like, hey, Magnus, you're a red robe. Hey, Taco, you've got a twin sister. And that led to some, I think we were figuring it out on the fly, how to respond to that stuff. I know when we started Stolen Century, like, Justin actually had some struggles with the fact that there was this major character in his life that I had sort of kept hidden this whole time. And how do I, like, all of a sudden, since we're in the past, like, have this character be very, very important to me when I know virtually nothing about them by virtue
It was also this feeling of, like, I have envisioned an entire life for this character. But if I had kind of had my head on a bit more of a swivel, I would have realized that, like, that is exactly what Taco went through. I mean, it's exactly Taco had his reality shattered realization.
It was so important to me not to take that away from Taco. And we, straight up, when we recorded the first episode of Stolen Century, when we were about 5 minutes in, we had to stop, and we talked for maybe a half hour. This is maybe the most this thing that you asked about, where we stopped for a half hour, we stopped recording, and we just like hashed it out because I super didn't want to take away Taco's like independence and Taco's you know, backstory of just like, you know, sort of fighting for every scrap he can get his hands on because it informs so much about Taco. And I think you thought by me introducing Loop that I had taken all that away. And there were a lot of people who were super critical of the fact that I had done that, who thought the same thing. And I can't stress enough, like, that was not my intention. And I don't think that's what introducing Loop did. It was just like you both went through this stuff.
Well,
and you were
and
both-
I was also a little worried that it was like, well, no, we have two Tacos. You know, like the, but at the same time, but as we got to know her, obviously Loop is very different from Taco, which is very cool. And that leads us excellently into this question from Laura Kate Dale. At what point in developing the show, Griffin, did you decide to have Loop be a trans character? And how did feedback end up? I loved her.
So pretty early on, I knew that Loop was going to be a trans character.
Wait, can I ask a preface to it? When did you know Loop was going to exist? That I'm curious about that. When did you decide Taco would have a sister?
Yeah, I guess I can talk about that first. Like, a lot of people were like, well, did you know when Taco took the umbrella from the Red Robe that it was Loop? And the answer was like, no, not at that point. I didn't. I knew that that character was a Red Robe. And all of the pieces kind of came together when I figured out who it would be, and I matched up the fact that, like, Loop made the Phoenix Fire Gauntlet, so that's why she was there, and that answered a lot of questions about that. When I figured out Loop was going to exist, again, I think it was probably around Crystal Kingdom when I figured out, like, who all the Red Robes were going to be. As for Loop being a trans woman, I knew pretty early on. I kind of struggled with it because I wanted to... It was really important to me that I try to do a good job of that, and because I know that that particular form of representation is, there have been a lot of examples of that sort of not being so great, and I did not want to be just another sort of bullet point on a very long list of you know, bad trans representation in fiction. And I get kind of uncomfortable being honest if I'm being honest, like, talking about this, because it is a thing that I stressed out about, because a lot of that comes from the fact that this is like our first time doing fiction, so like making good characters of any sort of type is a tricky thing, and I'm uncomfortable with the idea of like saying like, yeah, we crushed it. So Travis actually put out a tweet saying, like, we want to have, you know, trans characters on the show, will you please message us and tell us like what is important to you in how we handle that. And we got a shit ton of feedback, and Travis shared that with me, and I went through all of it, and it was all super, super helpful. I read a few things online from some trans authors who were talking about, like, here's how to have a good trans character on the show. Here's, like, a bunch of, like, shitty pitfalls to avoid. And so I tried to be like really, really, really thoughtful about that stuff in, creating Loop. And then also, like, everything I did as Loop, I tried to view it through that like particular lens, so that I could try to do as good a job, sort of realizing her as I possibly could. And the feedback was really, really good. I think, like, across the board, the feedback was great. And Loop is one of, like, people's, like, favorite characters. And so, like, I feel really good about how it turned out. If only because, like, I know that I was trying to be as thoughtful as I possibly could in including this character whose life experience is completely different from my own, which is always, like, a really, really tricky thing when you're doing fiction.
And I would also like to say, just to sum up the bulk of the responses we got in the ahead of time, when we asked, like, hey, we're going to introduce this character and we need your input, we need thoughts, was pretty much like, okay, just introduce her like you would any other character, because and let that character develop over time, just like you would any other character. And, you know, when we introduce, you know, Johan, we don't sit there and give you a bullet point checklist of his, you know, of his sexuality and his background and his gender. We just introduce the character, and then you get to learn about them over time.
Yeah, I don't want it to sound like this was like so hard, right? Because it really wasn't. Like, once Loop was in the story, and I knew I had an idea of who she was. It wasn't that difficult. It was just something that I tried to be mindful of. Whenever I was playing as Loop, whenever I was sort of inhabiting Loop, it really wasn't difficult. But I just really didn't want to fuck it up. I super didn't want to fuck it up.
It was so interesting to have a character that in my character's mind had not existed for the first like six or five arcs or whatever, and then suddenly in the Stolen Century was such an important guiding force that suddenly like kind of retroactively informed character dynamic and story in such an interesting way. All of them. I mean, I felt that
and
way
relationships
about
too. Yeah, existing sure. relationships.
I felt that way about Lucretia and Davenport. And Barry and Loop of suddenly like, oh, okay.
It all does start to make a lot more sense. It's funny how it colors retroactively the fact that like these three idiots made it as far as they did, and it's and what you learn from like Stolen Century, it's because they had these other, like what you were seeing in the first five arcs or six arcs, I guess, is really an incomplete picture of like three sort of like the dullest knives in the IPRE drawer, trying to like muddle through on their own. And when you see how much better they are when surrounded by competent people, I do want to say though, and this is something that like we have talked about privately, and I don't have a good answer for it, and I wish I did, but I think it's important to show that I think it's important to not try to pretend like we have all the answers. We're about to head into a few shorter arcs, and something that I love about the Adventure Zone is that it has always had so many different points of view in terms of gender and sexuality and so many different perspectives from those characters. And we're about to go into but like for Taco, it took me a long time before I was like sort of comfortable enough being Taco to like deal with those parts of his life, because it's not my own experience, and I wanted to do a good job of it. And I've talked about those struggles in previous TTAZZs, but I don't have a good answer for how we do that in shorter stories and still do really well by it.
Right.
And I don't have a good, I wish I did, but like, I don't want it to feel like such a drive-by that it's like just sort of checking boxes, you know, yeah. But I also don't want it to be just four straight white dudes.
Yeah,
being four straight white dudes. I really don't. We don't have a good answer for that.
I think the short answer is like this is something that is important to us and is also something that I recognize will be a little bit trickier to develop out in a much much shorter format, which is what we're going to be doing for a little while here. Once we get past the live shows that we kind of have in the can already. But like, it is something that is important to us moving forward. And I think it was an important part of this world and is absolutely something that is going to be present in the future of Adventure Zone stories.
I hope the character creation is more streamlined. I think like that's what we're bringing to it now is the character. And you know, we often reference that I wrote this huge backstory for Magnus, and I did, but that was all, like, you know, big, epic story, but still, it took a long time to figure out,
right,
like, what he was like in conversation, how he felt about, you know, walking into a room, like, what did he, you know, does he have a sense of humor? Is he funny? Is he snarky? Is he boring? Is he, you know, all that stuff happened as we were playing it.
And Taz Knights is what I was thinking of as an example, because I think we rolled up new characters, and while they weren't, you don't want them to be too well defined, because then you have no journey to take. You got no story to take. But I really liked those three characters, and I liked the dynamic that came about from it.
On that subject, though, like, I don't know that in Taz Knights, like, we got this idea of having, like, a bunch of representative characters just because, like, we didn't have a lot of time to work with. And like Justin said, it's not something that I want to feel forced ever. Like, we absolutely want to include characters that represent, you know, different folks, but like it that is a tricky thing to do. Representative fiction in general is a really, really difficult thing. Like, that conversation is very it's very fraught, and it is really difficult to parse. There's like this conversation about deciding between, you know, having representative characters or just speaking your own voice, and I think it's really, really difficult to do good representative characters, but it's also really important, because if we just spoke our voice, then all of our campaign would just be like four cishet white dudes, and I can't imagine that. Like, I can't imagine that being the truth. And so we're bloviating a lot, but like we're gonna keep you know, trying to make a very inclusive world and do a better job of that. Specifically about race, like, this was something that we have talked about before. Like, we were not mindful of this at all when we started doing the podcast, because it was not a thing that we knew to be mindful about. We did not know that this show would mean this particular thing to folks. And so when we started, it was just like, you know, I'm an elf. And that was like pretty much the extent of it. And now I think we know a lot more, and hopefully moving on to future arcs, we will be sort of better at this.
I have a quick question. I think Griffin could probably answer this one a lot faster. This is from Jeeves Bunny, and I also have been very curious about this. In a past The Adventure Zone, Griffin mentioned a dark timeline for if Magnus had been tempted by the temporal chalice. What had been planned for that?
Oh, okay, so let me think. If I thought Magnus was the only one that would maybe take the offer from the temporal chalice at the end of the 11th Hour arc, and so he was the only one that I kind of did plan like a dark timeline thing for. But basically, my idea was that we would then just like sort of hop on to a recording, just me and Travis, and record a little bit of like what life in this world, this happier world, would be like. And then eventually Taco and Merle and Lucretia and whoever else would, by some magic or maybe Lucas technology, cross over into this world, fucking turn left style, from that really great Doctor Who episode, and either convince Magnus that what he has done to their world is wrong and terrible. And also, in that sort of timeline convergence, I don't think Taco and Merle would know Magnus, and so that would have been very difficult. And
fuck, I'm glad we didn't have to threaten this really.
And then either like Magnus would have to give up on this world, which I think it would be a tough putt, or Merle and Taco and Lucretia would have to get that fucking cup back. And I fully expected Magnus to take it. Like, I had prepped a lot for this. I thought Magnus was going to take it, and I thought that it was going to lead to some pretty dark stuff, and I thought Magnus was dead. I thought Magnus
And you
was
could hear in Griffin's voice, I think, the a little bit of surprise when he didn't.
Let's see.
That's because I'm the best.
You're the best.
Travis.
What was the other thing like this that we could talk about?
The next question from Ella. What was going to happen if the gang hadn't gotten Magnus's spirit back before it was sucked into the astral plane during the suffering game?
Well, we can answer. Listen, I have an answer for this that also, at least,
how
will answer.
You have an answer for this?
Well, not exactly. Casper Marie wanted to know what were the lines, moments that have stuck with you the most, and that is one of mine. Arms outstretched to me was, that was another time where I got teared up. Because just the reaction and everybody working together and the unity of it. And we have never talked about this, but I got the impression that that one came out of left field for you.
Yeah, it absolutely did. And I think that there was this, the reason for me that moment was so powerful is because I think we all had this dawning realization that the three of you were not going to do what I had planned. Like, all of us were like slowly realizing, like, okay, this thing is about to change because of your agency, because of your
and not just
power
in the let's fuck Griffin over like we have in the past.
No, it absolutely wasn't coming from like a mischievous place. It was just like, no, you know what, fuck this, and I'm going to save my friend. And I think that was really cool. To answer the question of like what would have happened in the spirit world, I had this idea of like sort of a simultaneous across two planes sort of fight that would happen where Merle and Taco would be taking on Magnus's body with Edward inside of it and Lydia's lich form, while at the same time Magnus and Kravitz would be sort of fighting against the hunger in the astral plane. And we would get a bunch of development there about sort of, because at that point Magnus would be dead. And so there would be more, there would be sort of an easier way for me to roll out the like returning memories because the Voidfish doesn't infect dead people, and also sort of fleshing out Kravitz a little bit more, and also fleshing
everyone's
out
everyone's
like,
gonna
the
be so sad.
Well, no.
Including myself, I would have loved to seen a fight with like Magnus and Kravitz, like back to back fighting.
It would have been really, really cool. I would not trade in the arms outstretched moment for anything. I know there's a lot of people who are probably gonna go online and be like, oh, Travis, why did you do that? I would beg you not to do that, because for me, arms outstretched established a tone that would literally carry the rest of the show through the finale. The rest of the show would not have been what it was, because I reworked some stuff after arms outstretched. The rest of the show would not have been what it was without that moment. It was too powerful.
Well, and I think arms outstretched is also one of the moments where I let it... There seems to be, if you look at Taco, broadly speaking, like holistically, it might seem like there's inconsistencies in his self-serving attitude and the sort of strength of his connections to people. And I hope that it came across how the extent to which it was a put on. I mean, like, you can listen to what he says about being self-serving, and certainly some of his actions early on, like not going into the bubble city, stuff like that, that Taco's good out here stuff, like, would certainly seem to reinforce that. But, like, he is hungry for connection, and he does want, and he is, like, you have to remember that, like, even if he says, like, this is, you know, he's in it for himself or whatever, these two other guys are literally, at that point in the story, the only thing he had in the world. Like, obviously he had a connection with Kravitz.
For sure.
And, like, anyway, let's talk.
So that was a question that we got from a lot of people. I want to do real quick a speed round. I think we could answer a bunch of questions that compromise maybe 95% of the questions that we received.
Yes.
We got a lot of questions that sort of asked us to add to the lore of the world or add to the canon of the story. And I'm really hesitant to do that for so many reasons, like the largest of which being like, I like that the story is done and the story is a contained thing that we can point back to. And so I don't want this episode to be like, oh, you got to listen to the Adventure Zone if you want the full picture. I also want, like, there's a lot of stuff that kind of pops up in the fandom of fanon. And there's a lot of sort of like debate about that inside of certain communities that I don't know as much about. And so I do not want to stumble into it and like make it a big thing. But I think that there is some stuff that we can kind of clear up really quickly and answer some of the more common questions that we got. The first of which being, Travis, is Steven okay?
Griffin, did you not edit into the episode like I told you to?
Oh, no, I forgot. Yeah.
I literally said, I texted Griffin, oh, no, I forgot to mention Steven. I'm going to be tweeted about this forever. Yeah. And Griffin responded, I will edit something into the episode about that. And then
Sorry.
He did not. Steven is okay.
Okay, great. It was Angus. Griffin,
did Steven pass away and move to the astral plane?
Yeah, I think you had Steven in the astral plane. For eternity.
That must have been quite the shock for Julia, I assume. What the fuck is this?
Yeah, it's
what
a
is
bitch.
This now that's in my house?
Was I know what I said about Fanon and not wanting to step into it, but I have to address this. Was Angus a silver dragon the whole time? That was maybe my favorite fan theory.
Heard this.
So the idea was that like Angus was we never found out about Angus's parents, and there was like there was a lot of jokey joke stuff about like him being super super powerful in the train arc and him being like. There's some reference to him being ageless or something like that. And he also had a hoard, right? He had a hoard of silverware. And so people want to know if Angus was a silver dragon the whole time. I don't know. I'm actually going to leave this one unanswered.
Griffin wanted to read your question, but not answer it. Griffin.
Yeah. This was not something I thought of, but I think it's such a, I don't know. I like the idea of it a lot. And so I'm going to leave that one blank. Was Kravitz related to the Wonderland liches? This one came out of, a lot of people saying, because I said that the Liches in Wonderland had a brother named Keats, and who passed away, and that sort of like led them down this dark path. And when people talked about that, I think they thought I was a lot of the stuff I've seen spelled Keats, K-E-E-T-Z. And so it was like, well, that's kind of like Kravitz, and maybe that's who that was. But
nickname or something.
Right, but Keats is like an... I was thinking, I guess, of John Keats, the poet, so like K-E-A-T-S. I don't know how it turned into K-E-E-T-Z, but no, that was not sort of my
Griffin
intention.
Wait, can I ask one more quick attached to that,
this
Griffin?
Is a bad speed round.
I know, but you offhandedly said that Kravitz's hand was warm during the wedding.
Yeah.
Was that a part of a bigger reveal that now he's alive?
No, I think it was just love.
Okay.
The power of love. Who was the true love in exile in Crystal Canaan? That was in one of the verses. For me, that idea, because I used a lot of like plural pronouns when talking about Legion talked about itself, because it was like hundreds and hundreds and thousands of souls, and that like, and like Maureen's shell housed a lot of those whenever it sang these songs. Like, it was sort of a community of people singing about people that they, you know, were sort of cut off from in the astral plane.
Okay, this is one we get a lot, and when we've actually had to talk about recently. What was insert character here's last name?
I'm fine with not every character having a surname. Like, I like this idea.
We have said, by the way, during the show, that Taco's last name is Taco spelled differently. I do not think that that is accurate.
I think that was a joke I made, a fun joke
that Travis made.
It was so interesting to me to see people asking about Hurley's last name, where I always thought that Hurley was the last name. Like, wasn't she Detective Hurley or something?
Lieutenant Hurley.
Or maybe
I think Hurley was her name. Her name was just Hurley.
Captain Bane is still my favorite name.
Yeah, his name was Captain Bane, and he just happened to become a captain in the organization.
What if Merle had picked up the Umber Staff?
Yeah.
The whole Merle losing his magic powers 800 times wouldn't have had the same effect.
Only happened once, though, Dad, if you remember.
But it lasted forever.
I know, it did seem like Merle didn't have magic through a lot of the campaign.
Well, that's because what he did have, he didn't know how to use.
Yeah,
I mean, the short answer is he wouldn't. I don't think he ever was going to. Like, that was Taco's thing. And luckily, the dice were very helpful in this part where... Just Taco didn't, but like, Merle didn't get it, but like, I would have had to figure out some bullshit way for, like, this was Taco's staff. Like, this was the cool staff I had envisioned for Taco, and obviously it became a bigger thing because his twin sister was up in there. This is one of my bullshit things. Like, that was Taco's staff. It was Taco's to get.
I don't know what some of these are referencing.
Yeah, sure. So,
did they get their bracers off?
I think once you switch over the Bureau of Benevolence, like the sort of ironclad agreement that was required by the Bureau of Balance to make sure that like defectors didn't happen, was just not a thing. And so people could take
I will establish canon. Magnus kept his because, hey, free bracer.
Yeah, sure. Hey. The code on Lucretia's door, there was a puzzle in like the last episode of the reunion tour thing where to get into Lucretia's office, there was like a puzzle. There was a keypad with 7 digits in it, and you had to punch something in. This is really grimdark, and I'm really glad that you just hole through your fucking way through it. But the idea is that I thought you would just punch in a random string of numbers, and it would let you in, and that number would have been the number of people from your home plane that got consumed by the hunger, and like that number, that like population number, would be something that like somebody kind of could not forget about.
So at least a million, probably.
Yeah, probably.
In the 7 digits, for sure.
Yeah, so I'm glad that it didn't necessarily go that way. There's also one on here that Justin skipped of, did Loop get her $15 back from Greg Grimaldis? And all I want to say about that is Justin texted me something last night about that I'm very excited about. So
okay,
we're not going to get any deeper into it. Hey, okay, so this is Griffin, your Dungeon Master and all that stuff. I'm cutting in here. This is not the recording you were just hearing because we forgot to do the ad reads while we were recording this episode because we're all just so tired. And so I'm going to do it real, real fast so I can let you get back to the rest of the episode without doing the rest of the stuff I usually do here, because kind of that's what this whole episode of The Adventure Zone is all about. First off, I want to tell you about Blue Apron. Blue Apron is great. I'm recording this at 6:47 p.m. and Rachel is right now making a Blue Apron. It's like a some sort of pork bowl, and it my house smells fucking incredible right now, and I'm very excited to finish recording this and go yummy down on it. For less than $10 per person per meal, Blue Apron delivers seasonal recipes along with pre-portioned ingredients that you can use to make delicious home-cooked meals. Talk about stuff like basil pesto chicken with summer vegetable panzanella, whole grain pasta and summer vegetables with heirloom tomato caprese salad, meatball pizza with fresh mozzarella cheese and charmed tomatoes, a lot of really, really good stuff, and some sort of pork bowl situation that smells fucking awesome. You can check out this week's menu and get your first three meals for free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/adventure. One more time, that's blueapron.com/adventure. I also want to tell you about NatureBox. NatureBox is a great service where we all want to eat better, but when it comes to snacks, it feels like you're trying to decide between delicious in a billion calories or boring and tasteless, but NatureBox says, hey, fuck all that, because we have a better way of doing things. They have over 100 snacks that taste good and are better for you, and they're made from high quality simple ingredients, which means no artificial colors or sweeteners, and they add new snacks every month, and they're inspired by real customer feedback, so you know that you are getting just the tastiest stuff. And if you ever try a snack you don't like, you can send it back and they'll replace it for free. Right now you can save even more. NatureBox is offering Adventure Zone fans three free snacks and the first month of your membership for free when you order when you go to naturebox.com/adventurezone. That's naturebox.com/adventurezone for three free snacks with your first order. One more time, naturebox.com/adventurezone. I have a call to action here in the Jumbotron space. This one is that I really want you to, I'm sorry, I have to read the exact ad copy here, which is fuckwithghostfruits.com. The website is ghostfruits.com, not fuckwithghostfruits.com. The fuck with part is sort of just like a request. Hey you, go fuck with ghostfruits.com. They are a group of collaborating artists producing webcomics, art, mixed media, and music encompassing offbeat, surreal, but organic stories. We make everything constantly realist, deadest, worst. A ringing endorsement for ghostfruits.com. Hey, can you do me a favor? Maybe go fuck with them real quick. I have another personal message. This one's for Leah, and it's from Charlie, Francis, Josh, Kelly, and Rachel. And they all say to Leah, congratulations on running your first game of D&D. We've had a lot of fun as Jin, Marial, Phil, Tyrek, or Tyrek, and the Professor. I hope we continue murdering... I hope we continue helping storm giants, not murdering them. Please don't murder the storm giant. And sailing the skies in our murder boat. Okay, so that's where that came from. For a long time to come. Murder boat is... just going to write that down. Season 2, Murder Boat, Storm Giant. Okay, got it. Hey, thanks to everybody who tweeted about the show using the Zonecast hashtag. It really means a lot. If you tweeted that, you're going to end up as a character in this episode of the Adventure Zone Zone. That's not true. Yeah, we're going to be putting that on hold probably for a little bit, but man, we sure do appreciate it if you spread the word and tell folks to go listen to the thing because it's done. Go tell folks, hey, go listen to this thing from the beginning because you can just listen to all of it now. You can go binge it and it's all done and you're gonna dig it. We are really going to appreciate you continuing to spread the word as we move into new arcs and stuff like that, and helping us sort of expand as we try out new stuff. And we are going to be talking a lot more about that, I assure you, at the end of this episode that you're listening to right now. I want to say thanks to Maximum Fun for having us. You can go to MaximumFun.org and check out all the great podcasts there. Talk about shows like Lady to Lady and One Bad Mother and Baby Geniuses and Stop Podcasting Yourself and Jordan Jesse Go and Judge John Hodgman and a bunch of great shows that you can go to go check out for free at MaximumFun.org. We have a bunch of other stuff that we do. Also, you can go check out McElroyShows.com and see all the projects that we are involved in. And now I'm going to clam up and let you get back to the episode. And thank you all so much. And we love you. And okay, bye.
Are there any other questions on here that we want? Here's one. Griffin, were there any character interactions or scenes that you never got to that you wish you had more time for? And this is directed at Griffin, but I will say that, like, I really enjoyed any time that Taco and Angus spent together, and I feel like there's a lot of these, and it's part of what makes it good, right, that we don't exhaust all of these possibility threads to the point where they get, like, boring. But, like, I will say that I was loath to leave any scene that was, like, Taco and Angus because I thought that was so... That was such a fun relationship.
But there were a lot of Taco and Angus like relationships that could have happened in this world, right? Like, I think Magnus and Carrie's friendship boiled up because of Magnus wanted to become a rogue, and so it was like, oh, okay, well, I know who you can train with, and then that thing sort of turned out from there. A lot of my regrets on this particular subject are about Stolen Century. I feel like maybe I didn't do enough with Davenport with you all, and that just happened to boil up because of the actions that you decided to take in each cycle. I feel like you could have all done more with each other, with a few exceptions. Like, I was happy with how much Taco and Loop interaction there was. But yeah, I think I could have done more with Davenport. I think I could have done more with Lucretia in those things. Particularly, I would have liked to explore Loop and Lucretia's friendship a little bit more, but that just, I am very hesitant to whenever I do a scene that's just two NPCs interacting that you all are not involved in, like, that is I'm inherently, like, not inviting you all to the party a little bit. And so I try to limit that and only use it when I think it really needs to be delivered. And I think it needed to be delivered a little bit more with some of the characters in Stolen Century. So that's where most of my regrets come from. I would have liked to have had more stuff with Kravitz, I think, because we went a long time without seeing him. But again, that was partially because of what happened in the end of Wonderland.
I would like to answer some quickly. Let's see how quickly. Well, I know we haven't done it up to this point.
Really quickly.
Yeah, Matt asks, if you could have kept the bond summoning for one more round in the last battle, who would you have picked next? I had it in my head. I wanted to bring back Hodgepodge, the robot from the Lucas Laboratory, but I couldn't quite figure out how to do it and have it, like, what to ask Hodgepodge for. But I thought that would have been really fun. But instead, I went with the Power Bear on the last round. But yeah, I did have Hodgepodge in my head.
I really wanted to have... one of the characters that Stuart, Dan, or Elliot played.
Yeah, I think I cut
from
that
Flophouse.
Out. Yeah, I think I edited that out. You originally called in
Elliot. Elliot's
Scales,
character.
But what we decided was, like, you had never met Scales actually in the flesh, and so we didn't cut it. Here's one from Barizard. Who really was Jeff Andrew? There were a lot of people who thought that this was a self insert of me.
Was it not? I thought it was.
I'm okay with that being it was super not how I thought about it. Like, when I was sort of figuring out the multiplane stuff and, like, the nature of existence in this world and sort of this show's this world's philosophy about, like, existence, I really like this sort of recursive idea of just, like, everybody's making worlds all the time, whether that world is a story or I had set this up a little bit with, like, the light of creation not being from the gods, but from the people who made the gods. And so, like, this was that. But those people who made this world and made everything had their world made by somebody. And those people had their world made by somebody in a sort of infinite chain. And that chain is, like, existence. I went pretty deep down the rabbit hole with that idea. And so, like, Jeff Andrew was this person who collaborated to help make the world of this show. And I think it's not difficult to draw a direct line between, like, that idea, that philosophy, and what we actually literally did. I think Travis tapped into this a little bit, and he's like, oh, Gary Gygax, when I mentioned, like, they made the rules of this world, and, like, you know, Wizards of the Coast made D&D and made the rules of D&D. Is that who it was? That was, like, it was not my intention to, like, say that Jeff Andrew was me, and I was referring to us making this world, but, like, I think that by definition of the philosophy I just kind of laid out, I think that makes sense, but I super didn't want to do a self-insert.
Griffin, Kane asks, why did tacos give Taco magic energy? I have an answer, but I want to hear what your theory is.
Yeah, so, like, Istis's whole thing, I like the idea of, like, thinking about predestination and deities, and, like, if there's a deity who designs fate, is everything that happened in the podcast completely meaningless because all of it was sort of the design of this deity? And the answer was no. My idea for Istis is that she does have sort of a design, and with bonds are sort of, there was a connection between, like, bonds are these white threads. That's how they're visually represented. And she is, you know, she does, you know, celestial needlepoint in a way. And so bonds are, they represent these connections that are extremely powerful in this world. We saw them being used to accomplish these like incredible things, whether that was like Roswell's creation was the result of a bond, and Hurley jumping into the vines and healing Sloan, like that was a bond. And so like Istis has these designs and tries to fulfill these designs by giving out some power in some way to the people who are involved in the designs. And so Taco and Joaquin's connection was part of this Fate's design, and this moment where you cooked together and you ate this dish represented sort of the culmination of this bond. And so both of you received the power of the bond in a very, very like a very powerful way.
Huh. Interesting. My theory was, by the way, that tacos are good.
Yeah. They're just really great.
Tacos taste very good.
That's really good. You three have grown up together.
What?
I have been with you the whole step of the way. We all know what each other can do. And what I love about the podcasts are that it's an extension of the dinner table at our house where everybody tried to outdo each other and impress each other. And it was a blast. But what was your first WTF moment when we did this? So, and I'm going to preface this by giving mine. When we did something that surprised even you, and the reason I'm saying this, maybe I can define it by example. The car race in Pedals to the Metal was phenomenal. If you think about it, we described this amazing moment using just our words, just our story. And that is when I thought, what the hell? What are we doing? This is incredible. That was the first WTF for me.
I felt mine way earlier than that. When Phandalin was destroyed, because I remember in that moment, as Griffin is describing, now I'm thinking his name is Bogard. What's his name?
Barry Blue Jeans?
Gundren. Gundren Rockseeker kind of going nuclear. And I was trying to figure out how to fix it and what was the solution to it to save everybody. And then we couldn't. And suddenly, this arc where we had been very jokey and like making masturbation jokes throughout and, you know, making these like very juvenile jokes. We then climbed out of a well to see that like hundreds and maybe even thousands of people were now dead because of our inability to defuse the situation. And like that was a really big like, oh, shit moment for me.
For me, it was the end of the Rockport Limited. That sort of conclusion to that sort of set an outline that I think a lot of the good moments that would follow would follow of like all of you working together and doing this really badass thing of like jumping off a moving train and Taco making it disappear at the last second. And then all of you having these like pretty nice moments with the other characters that came off the train. That was when I was like, oh, okay, well, this is that ruled, and that's what the rest of the show is going to be like.
Yeah, that was huge for me, too. Like, as I cast that spell, I was thinking, like, oh, wait, this is a satisfying conclusion. I'll be damned. We did it. I think Hurley and Sloane's relationship and the way that scene culminated, obviously, it had its own sort of, like, tropey baggage that we unpacked as the show went on and we learned from it. But I think the fact that those two characters had that relationship within the context of this podcast, I think was the first time I realized like it, we've talked about this being a car that could fly. And I think that was the first time for me that the car flew. And I was like, oh shit, wait, this thing can do that. Like this tool has the ability to do that. I thought that was pretty wild.
And on a smaller level, Abracafuckyou was a moment,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, that was also really great.
That really was.
Yeah, I have a question here.
Yeah, man, I'm great.
I have a question here I really want to get into because it's I've also seen this, and I think that there was even some sort of debate inside of this podcast about this, and so I wanted to get into it. It's from Marissa, who said, one of the biggest debates I've seen in the fan community has involved Lucretia. People have very strong feelings about her story. I'm pretty pro-Lucretia, while my friends are not. So I was curious about how the players and the characters, but mostly you guys, feel about Lucretia now that everything's been revealed. Was she a complicated person who made some poor decisions? friends when she saw her friends in a desperate place, or someone who felt like she knew better than her friends and made choices for everyone that she had no right to make. On this subject, as sort of the person who made Lucretia and sort of designed this story, in my mind, she was never a villain. Like, I never thought of her, not even for a little bit, as doing evil in this world. In my mind, like, I think Lucretia is probably my favorite character, especially because of, like, the things that happened in the Stolen Century and her growth there and the way that things changed. Like, for me, that growth was the most concrete growth that I think any character went through in the entire show. And what I really tried to set up in Stolen Century is that, like, this was a really tough thing you all were going through, and you all had different ways of dealing with it. And her way was very, was perhaps overprotective, right? And so this thing that she did, she knew that you all were hurting, and she had this idea for how to solve it, and everybody else's idea was different. And she thought that the idea that you all went with was wrong, was inherently wrong. And so she grew from being this character who was very much on the sidelines, writing about the things that other people were doing and taking actions into her own hands, and simultaneously, like, making her friends forget this, like, really, really difficult and painful ordeal that they all had gone through. And so in my mind, she was not evil. She was never, ever, ever, ever the villain. But at the same time, like, I think the way that you all sort of reacted to her actions in different ways was, like, really interesting.
I think that what it comes down to, because I think we ran into this a lot too, and honestly, in games like D&D and stories like this, it's one of the hardest things for me, is realizing that, much like in real life, there's very rarely a yes or no, like, good and bad way to do something. And so I remember when we landed on the planet with the robots and we found the gym and we had to decide, like,
oh yeah,
if we leave the gym and the hunger consumes it, it will grow that much more powerful, but if we destroy it, we're basically killing life on this planet.
Hey let's talk about this. We re-recorded that bit,
yeah,
because originally they destroyed the fucking world. They all mm-hmm. destroyed the world and then flew away. And then that was the ending. And we finished recording and almost, like, we hung up on the Skype call. And then, like, a minute later, we started texting, like, that sucked. That was that was not the tone of this show. That was not what we should go for.
I felt bad. Like, I went downstairs and talked with Teresa afterwards, and I was like, that was wrong. The thing we did was wrong, and I feel bad about it.
It was not a situation where, like, you all made a tough choice and then regretted it, and maybe that regret could have been, like, in the show in some sort of tangible way that would have been good, and so we betrayed that. This was like this doesn't match the tone of the show. It doesn't match what these characters would actually do. Mm-hmm. It's just, like, it is what happened, and it was wrong.
But that leads me to that feeling of, like, it allows me to relate to Lucretia in that way of, like, what she had to do was, she didn't relish it. I don't think the difference between a villain and a tragic hero is, a villain thinks that the wrong thing they are doing is right, and a tragic hero does the wrong thing because that is the only way they can see to do good. Like, it's a subtle difference, but I don't think Lucretia reveled in erasing people's memories. I don't think she liked lying to her friends. I think it was, my take on it was, it was very isolating, and it was the hard thing to do. And it's the only way she saw of protecting her friends was to do the wrong thing for the right reasons. And so I actually see her as a very tragic figure, and that is why Magnus hugs her when he does, is, like, this feeling of, like, I understand that the thing you had to do, you didn't enjoy, but you were trying to protect us. And if there's anyone that understands that, it's Magnus.
Okay. Just to put a button in this real quick, this show, a lot of this show is about the power of stories and the way that people's stories impact you and the power that those stories have to change things. And I think that Lucretia, from Taka's perspective, Lucretia robbed him of the most important story in his life without a 100% guarantee that she was going to be able to restore that. And yeah. Like, Taka has impulses towards making connections, like I've talked about, but, like, Taco's not a hero. Taco would watch the world burn if it meant, like, the people he cared about, really cared about, were safe and protected.
And Lucretia, and, like, approached this situation from the exact polar opposite sort of
exactly,
viewpoint.
Right. But, like, she wasn't losing a sister in the deal. Taco was.
Right.
And I think that, like, that imbalance is where Taco's distrust came from. And, like, I'm here to tell you, I do not know if that will ever... I don't know. Like, we're not, like, filling in plot gaps or whatever. But, like, from my perspective, I don't think that... It probably softened over time, but I don't think the sting of that is something that Taco would ever sort of let go of, even though things worked out.
I'm okay with that. I think it's really interesting that you all responded to the truth of this situation in different ways. And I don't think it paints Lucretia with any kind of brush. And I think people who say, like, I think this idea of just like, oh, well, Lucretia's a bad person or Lucretia's a villain is sort of like looking at this situation as if it had an easy answer. I tried to inject a lot of nuance into what she had to do because, like, I think that's the only way that it makes sense with her character because she's not an evil person. She's an incredibly good person who did this really, 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 really difficult thing. And so people who say, I got personally kind of frustrated because I had never thought of her as a villain and I saw a lot of people who did. I think it is reductive to say, like, oh, well, she's evil because of what she did. She's not. She just isn't.
I want to jump back to a completely different thing. Dad mentioned the question from Casper about moments that really suck with you, and like I just saw that as I was scrolling down. I want to say the bank fight with in Refuge with Roswell,
yeah,
where we were trying to like find the book and say the code. Basically, everything in the 11th. I think 11th Hour is my favorite conceptual arc.
Same
of the reset, but like that moment was such an interesting, like, what we are doing is wrong. Like, I remember playing as Magnus and having to do bad stuff to move the story forward and, like, go, well, this is going to reset, so I guess I got to deal with doing this terrible thing to this nice person. And, like, a lot of that was a really interesting kind of dichotomy of, like, how do I move the story forward and balance the fact that I know that I wouldn't do this if I was afraid of the ramifications.
Right.
It was very interesting. I was just going to answer a quick question. Charlotte wanted to know, is Magnus allowed to bring his dogs on the Bureau's moon base? And the answer is, the first thing Magnus trains his dogs not to do is run off
the edge. It's very important.
Yeah.
Here's a quick one from Lauren. How much stop down gets edited out? How many takes of each thing? It's wonderfully produced in a compact way, but when D&D is played, there are tons of stop down moments, rules reading, and audio dull discussions about what to do next, what a character wants to do in particular, et cetera, et cetera. We edit a lot. I edit like a shit ton out. I think in like the finale, we recorded probably close to 3.5 hours, and I edited pretty much a full hour out of that. So there's a lot. And there's a lot of people who hear that and like, oh, come on, release the tapes. No, this thing is
no
fucking way. Not because
and it's
we're
not takes. It's not that the question was phrased that way. Like, how many takes of each thing? We're not actors by trade.
So,
and
yeah, you all didn't do that, but I did a little bit. Especially in the later episodes, I recorded some sort of more monologue-y stuff that maybe I didn't have prepared when we started playing, and so I recorded those in and dropped them in later, and I would take sort of multiple takes on that. Johan's line of you're going to have to fight and you're going to win, I worked on that for like 45 minutes, like just doing 100 takes of it because I really wanted the best delivery of it.
Angus, but that's different deliveries. It's not like we were improvising different shit every time.
Right,
it's not
sure.
Like Anchorman.
We never, I don't think we ever had to react to a thing that we had done before. Like, mm-mm. we never once like did another take of
except
something.
Except destroying
like,
the gym.
Except other destroying than the
that,
gym. Yeah.
Well, that was a different, I mean, but like, that was a meaningful story up, yeah. Change. We didn't like do a moment. It was just changing how that moment went.
Should we there are a lot of other questions that we could talk about, but I know we kind of have to wrap up here, but do we want to spend some time talking about what we have planned for coming up? Because I really want folks to understand that we're not done doing the Adventure Zone.
Yes.
So we're done doing the Adventure Zone.
No, stop.
So
we have over. We have two live shows that are going to go up. Our live show in Austin, which was my sort of persona a little bit inspired one that, man, that one got really out of hand. And then San Diego show, which was our take on the Tomb of Horrors. It was very, that one was like one of my favorites we've done live. So we're going to have those go up in a while for the next, I guess, month, since this is biweekly. And then we're going to start doing a bunch of different stuff. We're going to be doing more short form, probably 2 to 3 episode long mini arcs that will be essentially, well, I guess you could think of them as pilots, but really it's going to be us playing new games, taking turns DMing. I guess we have to say GM now if we're playing non-Dungeons and Dragons stuff. GMing, taking turns GMing, exploring new worlds and new genres. And part of that will be like us sort of searching for what we want to do for a longer thing as like season two. But it's also like going to, like, I think help us learn how to tell stories in this way. For me, I started listening to Friends at the Table, at another actual play podcast I talk a lot about, and that was very, that was revelatory to me, because it kind of like showed me like what else you could do with actual play storytelling. And so I think once we all kind of, and they play like other games that aren't D&D, and so I think if we take some turns playing some non-D&D games and try telling other stories, we're going to learn so much, regardless of what we end up doing for the next season, that will help us make that season better.
It's gonna be pretty experimental, and like,
I'm worried, and we're all really worried about it, right? We're all really nervous because we made this thing that we love and we're so proud of and we know really resonated with people, and to move away from that into a new venture is like really, 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 really scary. And I hope everybody is as down with this idea as we are, because I know the first time we put out a new episode in this new world with new games and new rules and new GM, there are going to be
new characters.
New characters. There are going to be people who say like, "Ugh, this isn't as good," or "Ugh, I wish you would go back to the other thing," or "Ugh, I wish, you know, whatever we do for season two, whoever ends up GMing it," there are going to be people who say like, "Oh, I wish you'd done the other thing," or "Oh, I wish somebody else was GMing. I thought that they had done a better job."
I don't think that's going to happen for these mini episodes.
You should get it's absolutely, absolutely happen. Going to happen.
Let me just go ahead and say, if you complain enough, we will just go back to the old characters and the old story. So yeah, just Campbell, so make sure you tweet at us a lot.
Travis, you're that's not true. It's not true. What Travis just said is not true. This story is done, and I would I don't want to touch it. I love it. We have this thing now, and it's finished, and for the rest of our lives, it's finished, and we have it, and it's done, and I'm so proud of it.
On a side separate note to that point, I had a child over the course of recording the Adventure Zone and Adventure Zone Balance, and like the idea that in a couple years when she's older, I can play this for her as like this thing I
it's
made.
It's really special.
We made it's very important
but,
to me.
But
and
it's
means
but
a
it's,
lot.
And it's done. And it's so done. We have to move on. We have to try new stuff. We have to do this new stuff. And I hope that you all give us the benefit of the doubt and understand that we are going to be improved just by playing this stuff. Even if it doesn't work out, if we do a 2 or 3 episode arc and we hit the end of it and we're like, "Oh, it never really clicked and we didn't really like it," we hope you understand that like we will be better now because we have tried that thing. There is no downside to this experimentation that we are going to be doing, because I really think it's going to result in us having a super clear picture of what we want the next thing to be. And starting out with that clear picture, which we did not have in Balance, is going to lead to a story that I cannot fucking wait to get into.
And in that benefit of the doubt, what I would say is this, like, we will, of course, as always, like, listen to what y'all are saying and hear. I'm anxious to hear, you know, once we get somewhere that we're happy with, like, of course, I'm anxious to hear what people think of it and like use that feedback to sort of help us guide whatever. But like, the two things I would say about that is, one, please understand that it is going to be us experimenting, and I would ask you to try to be respectful of that, the fact that you are hearing experimentation and not the finished product, as like, it is not going to be on the level that Balance was towards the end. It just took a long, long, long time to get there. So like, please try to keep it constructive is what I would say. And also, please understand that like, whatever we do moving forward and whatever, like, this is not a public voting process. There is no like, we are not, you know, 51 votes for this thing, 49 votes for this other thing. Okay, we do the 51 votes thing. That's not in any way what's happening. So like, don't feel like you need to weigh in to make your voice heard. So we'll like, it's not
understand how messy that would get for us as creators and also family members. Like, we all try to approach this thing from a ego-free standpoint. And so, like, the introduction whoever's thing gets the most votes is going to be the next thing. What we are going to do is the thing that we are most excited about that we think is going to lead to the best story.
I would argue that, like, the best version of this may be that, like, the second season of The Adventure Zone is not one of these sort of, like, mini things that we do. I like the idea that, like, maybe the mini things are things like nights that we can return to and revisit and that sort of thing, but like not necessarily going to be those shows. It's like not necessarily going to be these stories either. So like I understand what a big ask that is to if you've been listening to the show for a long time, and then we have talked candidly, like we understand that like we will lose some people, like there will be some people who want to bounce, and if you're listening to this, I hope that's not you. And I hope that you'll hang in there with us. But, like, we understand that, like, and you know what? Honestly, that's fine. I'm really happy with balance. I'm really proud of it. And if that's all you wanted and you want to move on to other stuff, like, completely get it. Like,
Justin's not being snide, and we are not being snide when we say that. It's the truth. Not all stories are going to resonate with the same people. And so, like, if you do not like the next thing and you want to go, like, I fucking completely, completely, totally understand that. I absolutely get it. I'm not being shitty when I say that.
I would say, though, don't do that, because it's going to get pretty Buck Wild, and you do definitely want to be on board for how Buck Wild
it gets. And let me also say, wait a minute, on the other side of the coin, just for a second, let me say, as the dad, it's still us. It's still the four of us telling stories and the things that we brought to the table in balance.
For now, there's some contract stuff that we're still trying to work it out.
Why don't you ever tell me about that?
I have a big ask, frankly. Like, I'm if you want me back, I will say I'm especially nervous because I'm building mine from scratch.
Yeah, Travis making a game for a Western arc, right?
Yeah, and let me also say to that, there will be a lot of, once again, people saying, like, oh, that's very similar. I don't think I'm, like, reinventing the wheel. I don't think that mine is a standalone thing, but I, like, had an idea for a story I wanted to tell and couldn't find the perfect thing. So instead, I came up with the story I wanted to tell, and now I'm building mechanics around it. And building a set around it,
that's a big risky thing, and I know because I kind of made a game for Stolen Century, and there are things mm-hmm. I would go back and change. So like this is what I'm talking about. If like for some reason, if like the mechanics, if we hit the end of it, like oh, there's stuff I would have changed about that game. Okay, but we're still going to be better. Travis is going to be better because Travis is going to understand game systems in a way mm-hmm. that is going to be like really, really, really informative.
Mostly because it's the worst kept secret in the world. I had five students come up to me during class yesterday and say, so you're the new GM, huh? So I'm going to do the first pilot. It is going to be a superhero based. Can I say the game system?
Fate.
We're going to play Fate. We're going to use the Fate system. So it's all new there. And the name of this arc, if you want to call it that, is Taz Commitment.
Commitment. I like that. I have two ideas. One is sort of one is in a game called Monster of the Week that I want to be kind of like persona based while still having sort of the monster hunty element of shows like Supernatural and stuff like that in a town in West Virginia that I'm very excited about. And I have another story that I want to do using a game called Uncharted Worlds that is kind of a post-Earth space opera about people who try to preserve the things that they want to preserve from Earth that I think is going to be really neat. Those are my two ideas right now.
I'm going to do the greatest detective story ever.
Okay.
It's going to be great.
Live shows. We're going to mention the live shows real quick.
Yeah,
haven't we said that? Like we're.
I think so. We got one coming up in November, and then or October, and then we in Nashville, and then we have another one coming up in Tacoma. Those will still be Trace Horny Boys, and we'll keep doing that
for the foreseeable future. Yeah,
let's wrap up because Juice has to go. But I just want to say I've said it 100 times. Thank you all so much for listening and for giving us this experience. Like, it's not a like, I don't want people to think about it in like a crass way, like, oh, you all have helped our careers by making this show successful. You all helped me, like, personally, because I didn't know that this was a thing that we could do. And
yeah.
and now I do, and that experience and having this finished thing that was also really special to a lot of other people, like, that is the thing that matters to me and is going to matter to me for literally the rest of my life. Like, this show changed my life, and that is, like, in large part thanks to the community that sort of grew up around it. So thank you all so much.
I grew creatively, not just from doing the show, but from how people reacted to it and the feedback they gave, and it taught me a lot about being a creator, and what that can mean to people, the things that you create, and how important those things can be to people, was way more informative to me than any actual thing that happened in the story, was learning about the impact the story had on others and the kind of responsibility of that. Thank you everybody for listening and being a part of it so far.
And I made a whole bunch of new friends. I mean, a shitload of new friends. I love the supporters and the fans and the people who listen. And I got to do it with the three most important people in my life. I mean,
who?
There's no downside there. Charlie and mm-hmm. Henry and BB.
And I guess for me, just you're welcome.
Okay.
I want to make sure to say you're welcome.
That's it for the Adventure Zone. That's it for balance, really. And
yes,
now we're going to move on to the next thing. We're going to put out a couple live shows while we all take a, I think, well-earned rest. And
especially you. You were amazing.
Yeah, yep. Hooray for Griffin.
Griffin.
Yay,
yeah,
Griffin.
Yeah, finally someone tells Griffin he's doing a good job.
Good job, Griffin.
So on that note...
The new album is up on Bandcamp of all the music for the last three arcs of Reunion Tour and Stolen Century and Story and Song. You can get it at griffinmacroy.bandcamp.com, and all the album sales through the rest of August are going to the SPLC.
Cool. Okay, that's going to do it for us. Bye, everybody. Hang in there. We love you.
Next time we talk to you, we'll be doing a new story. Bye.
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 MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture. Artist owned.
Listener supported.
Hi, I'm comedian Emily Heller.
And I'm cartoonist Lisa Hannawalt.
And we're the hosts of Baby Geniuses.
Do you want to learn weird new facts?
Do you like hearing successful creative women talk about their poop?
Do you want the scoop on Martha Stewart's pony?
If you answered yes to any of these questions, our show is for you.
We interview people like Paul F. Tompkins,
Kristen Shaw,
Michael Che,
and more. So check us out on Maximum Fun.
And let us mess up your brain.
Yes, please.
We know everything. Baby geniuses tell us something we don't know.
Mugs, shirts, stickers, patches, tanks, and more are yours for the purchasing at maxfunstore.com. Hey, you already love the podcasts, so why not take this to the next level and outfit your home and bod with our merch? maxfunstore.com. Because if you have to wear a shirt, it should be one of ours.